Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
Therefore, my beloved brothers and sisters, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. 1 Corinthians 15:58, some good words of encouragement for us today, especially those of us homeschooling our kids, and especially those who are homeschooling and parenting kids from hard places during this crazy COVID-19 season that we're in. I'm Sandra Flack. Thank you for joining us today for episode 222 of Orphans No More. Maybe your state or region has opened back up, or maybe you're in a place like me here in upstate New York where things are just beginning to open, but still the world sort of seems upside down. I'm the executive director of JFO, and the nonprofit ministry that hosts this podcast, and we manage Care Portal here, among other things. And one thing that we've been struggling with during this time is planning our annual fundraising banquet. We had such an amazing banquet last year, and now we're wondering, do we plan it? It was scheduled for September. Then at first we thought, well, maybe we should push it back to October. And then following the news, October might not be so good. So we're back to September, but we're not even sure if we're going to be able to have it. And maybe we need to have a virtual event, and will that even be successful? And we rely on this banquet for 75% of our funding. We rely on the generosity of individuals and churches and businesses. And so just the responsibility of making that decision has been huge. So we've been praying, and we just really feel led to step out in faith, and we're going to continue to plan our banquet. It is for September 24th, but we're also going to simultaneously plan a virtual event in case restaurants are closed again. But we're really praying and believing and hoping that everything's going to be open and somewhat back to normal, or whatever normal is going to look like right during this time, especially by September. So just pray for us as we navigate through these things. That last year when we had our banquet, everything was just amazing and we knew we would do it again. And then in January, we were setting our goals for the new year. And, you know, obviously we're putting that on the calendar along with all these other things as we set our goals for the year. And then COVID-19, right? So we're all navigating decisions and challenges and all of these crazy things. So keep us in your prayers. And whatever your situation is, like, we're all dealing with these things. I just pray today's show will be an encouragement to you and you'll be inspired, because I'm thrilled to introduce our guest today. Lisa Qualls is author of The Connected Parent, which she co-wrote with the late, great Dr. Karen Purvis. She is a mom of 12 kids by birth and adoption, and sometimes through foster care. Using her training as a TBRI practitioner and as a certified Enneagram coach, we didn't even get a chance to talk about that. I did take my test not too long ago, so I know my numbers for that. That's probably a different conversation. But Lisa coaches adoptive and foster parents, and she's co-host of the Adoption Connection podcast. So I'm sure she's going to coach us and inspire us today. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you so much. It's really great to be here with you.
It is great to be here with you. I'm so thrilled that you're on. I kept seeing on social media the Connected Parent book written by yourself and Dr. Karen Purvis. And I kept thinking, how did she do that? You know, I was so intrigued. So I'm like, I want to talk to her about that. And anybody who follows our show and listens, we talk about the Connected Child and Dr. Purvis and Empowered to Connect and all those things all the time. So I'm so excited that you're with us. But I always like to start at the beginning of adoption stories, because I find once we say yes to God, He opens the door to so much more. I know He did that in my life, and He's done that in your life. So Lisa, what led you and your husband, Russ? You have 12 children, 8 by birth, 4 by adoption. What led you to adopt?
Well, the story goes back even further, even before I met Russ. And this is a whole other conversation as well. But as a young teen, I got pregnant, and it's a long story. I actually was in foster care and I would use the word forced, but I was told I had to place my baby for adoption. And it was very tragic and very hard. And so that is the first time that adoption really touched my life. And then Russ and I married while we were undergrads in college. And we pretty soon started our family. In fact, we lived in upstate New York for 6 years while he was in grad school. So I'm familiar with that part of the country. But we went on to have 7 children, giving me 8 children by birth. And my oldest son, who had been placed for adoption, reunited with me when he was a teenager. And so that was it. You know, we had this great big family. And when my youngest was about 3 years old, I was homeschooling everybody. But when she was 3, I just had this sense that God was going to do something in our lives, that he was leading us towards something new. I actually did not know it was adoption. I thought I was going to go back to school and do something really different. But some friends of ours that we'd met in New York called us to tell us that they were adopting 2 little boys from Ethiopia. And it is like something cracked open in me. And I felt compelled, like I needed to know more. I needed to know more. And honestly, if you had asked me in those years if I would ever consider adopting, I would have probably said no, because my experience of losing my son to adoption was so devastating that I never thought I would let that touch my life again. But I felt differently about Ethiopia. The more I learned about Ethiopia, the more I thought, you know, I think this is what we are called to. And I'm already home full time with my kids. I love being a mom. I thought I was a pretty good mom. And so we prayed a lot, we read a lot, we talked about it, and we decided also to adopt 2 little boys from Ethiopia. We actually didn't have a preference for boys or girls, but girls were more requested. So we said, great, give us boys, we like boys. And so we said, related, unrelated, it didn't matter to us. But during that process, when we were deciding if we were going to adopt, we started sponsoring a little girl at an orphanage in Ethiopia that was specifically for children living with HIV. And her picture was on our refrigerator, and we thought about her, we prayed for her. And when our friends traveled to Ethiopia, they went to that orphanage to meet her. And also my friend is an infectious disease specialist. So she went to work with the nurses there and give them some help. And when they talked to them about this beautiful little girl, Chalkidon, the nurses said, oh, we really hope your friends will adopt her. And my friend Emily was like, oh, no, 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 they're her sponsors. They're adopting 2 little boys, you know. But that opened another thing for us where we felt compelled by the Holy Spirit to adopt this little girl, Chalkidon. And this didn't make sense to our logical plans. She was older than our youngest. We weren't going to adopt out of birth order, all these things. But we felt that God was calling us to her. And so we ended up adopting 3 unrelated children through 2 different agencies simultaneously in Ethiopia. And so we traveled in 2007 to get them. And then we went back a year later to adopt a little girl who was about 10 and a half, who we met on that first trip.
So 4 altogether, 2 boys, 2 girls.
Mm-hmm. Within about 16 months, we added 4 children to our family.
We could be twins, Lisa, because a lot of our stories are so, both of our stories are so similar. There's a lot of parts that I'm sitting here going, me too. incredible. So now I know as you started your adoption journey, you also began, you started a blog, right, back in 2006. Tell us about that, because that comes into your story.
Yes. So I had originally started sending out group emails, you know, to our family and friends, just keeping them apprised of how things were going. And I had a young son. My son Isaiah is very, very techie. And he was probably about 12, I think. He said, Mom, you should start a blog. And I was like, well, what is a blog? But he explained it to me and I looked at a few and I thought, you know, this makes sense. And so he set it up for me and it had a different name at first, but for at least a decade, I've been blogging at onethankfulmom.com. And that became a real new ministry for me. You know, I started out just telling our story. When we brought our children home, especially for Calcadon, it was extremely difficult. She was a very traumatized child. And when I didn't want anybody to know, because I felt ashamed, like I was a failure and that it was somehow my fault that I couldn't make this all work very well. But when I started to get honest on my blog, people started coming because nobody was talking about the hard stuff. And I think, you know, we didn't want to discourage people. I think a lot of us Christians, we wanted to encourage people to follow God's calling to care for the orphan. And we were afraid to discourage people. But I knew that I was learning so much. I had to share it with other people. So that's how the blog grew and started everything that I do now.
Wow. I love that. And we're going to let our listeners know, we're going to include it in the show notes and you'll share it later where we can find and connect with you through your blog and all the other things that you have out there. And I know like me, probably before you brought your four kids home from Ethiopia, you were reading books and doing some research and educating yourself on attachment and things like that, that we do, but it doesn't seem anything really prepares us once we get our kids home, right? So what was your experience like? I know you said you started to talk about that in your blog. You were blogging this hard stuff that nobody else was talking about.
Yes. Well, when we were in Ethiopia and we met Calcadon for the first time, within a very short time, we began to realize that things were likely to be very, very difficult when we got her home. And, you know, she was... Well, and maybe I should share at the beginning because you can hear I'm kind of speaking of her in the past tense. We did years later, and I can share more later, but we did end up losing her in a really tragic car accident when she was 13. But anyhow, going back to, which was, of course, devastating. But going back to when we met her, I mean, she was beautiful. Like she was one of those children who just sparkled. You know, she had these deep dimples, beautiful curly hair. But that part of that sparkliness we came to realize was actually hypervigilance. Like she was on full alert all the time, yeah. All the time. She was scanning for danger. And of course, we didn't really get that at first. We just thought she was super energetic. Like when I went back and read the referral information, they kept referring to her as being so energetic. Well, she was, because she was fueled by stress. Her neurochemistry was just flooded with cortisol and stress hormones and things because she was so hypervigilant. So we got her home and very quickly our lives dramatically changed. And our whole family, our life revolved around her challenging behaviors, incredible, intense rages, aggression, you know, her, because of trauma, her brain had been rewired to see the whole world as threatening. And she viewed her siblings as competition for everything. And so it led to some really deep, hard, hard times in our family.
Wow. So I know along the way, you discovered TBRI. And then TBRI, for our listeners who might not know, is trust-based relational intervention. Which helps empowers, connects, and corrects those principles. It's a whole new way of parenting. I know we found the Connected Child book and Dr. Purvis, and then eventually Empowered to Connect because of the trauma of our youngest that we had adopted. We thought we knew what we were doing as adoptive parents. We've done this before. We're good at this. The youngest, game changer. We did not know what we were doing. It changed our whole family, a lot of what you're describing there. And then praying and looking for help, we found the Connected Child book. So I know you have a similar story with that and you discovered TBRI. How did you find it? Because I know for me, it was I was at a homeschooling convention and bumped into another family that had adopted, and they said, "Oh, have you read this book?" And I'm like, "No, but I'll do anything at this point."
Yes.
I started our journey with the Connected Child and TBRI. So how was it? How did it go for you?
Well, it's a little bit similar. Like, we were desperately looking for help. We were looking everywhere for help. And one of my blog readers introduced me to Dr. Purvis. She told me about the Connected Child. And I wish I could remember who that was, because she changed my life, you know. And anyhow, I read the Connected Child and I thought, oh, this is really important. I am learning brand new things. And I had a background in mental health. I'd worked with really challenging children before, but the way it was laid out for me in the Connected Child, it just worked with my brain. And I started grabbing hold of it. And even more important probably than that book for me was I found three videos. They're really old videos of Dr. Purvis teaching. And when I heard her speak, then it connected with my heart emotionally. And I remember thinking, she has hope for my kids. She believes they can heal, and I'm going to grab onto her hope, because I didn't feel like I had much anymore, you know, by that point. And so I threw myself into learning TBRI, although I didn't even know it had a name, TBRI, back then, you know. And I ended up connecting with the folks at Empowered to Connect. I ended up writing for them and then eventually speaking with them at conferences. And that's where I actually got to meet Dr. Purvis, which was a gift.
Yeah, you got to spend lots of time with her. And I know you said Michael and Amy Monroe, who were originally established Empowered to Connect, with Dr. Purvis. So all of those things were they brought our family hope as well, and healing through implementing those new tools that we were learning. And it's incredible. So how did, once you started applying the TBRI principles, how did that, Lisa, change your family?
Well, it's interesting. As my husband and I learned, well, and I should say too, that we ended up getting to go to TCU. Russ and I both did the whole TBRI practitioner training. So that really immersed us, because there was a lot of preparation before we went for the week. And so we were very immersed in it. And I remember thinking, I wish I had known this when I first started my family. I wish I'd known this 20 years ago, because I would have parented all of my children this way. You know, once I learned about connected parenting, I just never looked back to the old way that I had been taught of how to parent as a Christian mom, you know? So it changed everything. It changed because I had structure for sure in my home, but I definitely was a little more heavy on nurture. And so I had to really start to beef up my structure. We began using all the tools, the scripts, the compromises, which when I first read about compromises, I was like, no way, you know, but we started all of that. We also dove into learning about sensory processing disorder. So all of these things became part of the way we lived.
Yeah, I found that when you start really looking at your children's behavior through that lens of their history and factoring that in, then there's always the why behind the behavior. And I found I had more compassion because I understood this is where this is coming from. You know, one of the, you mentioned compromises. And I know one of the things that works really well with our youngest is choices. And,
yes.
And he's 14, but just yesterday I was like, okay, because his dad wanted him to mow this little section of lawn. And he has a little riding lawn mower that we let him use. But we have a lot of property that needs to be mowed. So to my son, it's very overwhelming, even though my husband broke it down into just do this little part. He just all day long had an excuse as to why he couldn't do it. And finally I said, well, at 3 o'clock, I said, well, you can either mow or go for a walk with me, because I wanted him outside. He'd been inside and it was a beautiful day. And he was like, I'll go for a walk with you, which I wasn't expecting that a 14-year-old, like he picked a walk with mom over riding a lawnmower. But but then when we came back, I said, well, now you can either do your art project, which he does not like, but he has to do this art project to turn in for school. You can either do your art project or you can mow. And that time he picked mowing. So, but it empowers them to make that decision, but at the same time, they still have to do what it is that they're supposed to be doing. So just tools like that along the way have been very helpful to our family. So your family found healing when you started implementing those things. But Lisa, take us back, because I don't want to just gloss over this monumental moment in your life. I know you lost Kalki Don. Mm-hmm. Share that story with us.
Well, when she was 13, she'd been through a lot of healing treatment. She had come so, so far, and we were actually in a sweet spot with her. And it was Christmas time of the very end of 2014. And when we look back, you know, we had the sweetest Christmas with her. And we'd never, in our memories, had a really good holiday with her, because holidays, birthdays, hers or anybody else's, Christmas, all those things got her so dysregulated that a lot of times our holidays were a bit focused on just trying to manage her. And that Christmas, as she was 13, was so wonderful. She actually gave gifts to her siblings, which she had never done before, and played games with everybody, and it was just wonderful. And we were taking her to visit a friend in Montana, so it happened to just be Russ and me and Kalki Don in the car. It was December 27th, and, you know, we live in North Idaho. It snows here all the time. There was literally a half an inch of snow on the ground, but we slid on the snow and had a terrible accident. And, you know, I was really injured, and Kalki Don did not survive the accident. So it was very devastating for our family. And it's changed us a lot. Actually, I feel profoundly changed. It's been now 5 years. And I would say at about when it had been 4 years, I started to feel more like myself. But really, for 4 years, I didn't feel like myself at all. And I don't think I'm the same. I've been changed forever. And that's okay. God is using these hard, hard things to make us who he wants us to be.
And that is such a devastating loss. I'm so sorry that you lost your daughter, but it just seems like such a blessing from the Lord that he gave you that sweet time with her. You have those memories to hold on to, and how she had come through that. The adoption community also suffered the loss of Dr. Karen Purvis in 2016. And I know you go pretty far back with Dr. Purvis, and you had done some writing, and you took the TBRI at Texas Christian University. At what point in your journey did you and Dr. Purvis begin writing the Connected Parenting book?
Well, when we were doing the Empowered to Connect conferences, when I was speaking with them, I had an idea for a book, and it had been in my mind for a while. And I just kept thinking how much I valued the books that I had. And you can imagine, like you, I had amassed a library. I mean, I was looking for help everywhere. But I kept thinking, I love what I'm learning, but not one of these authors is living my life. Mm-hmm. Not one of these authors is, and they're wonderful, you know, but they're professionals, a lot of them. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could have a book that combined real life experiences, my real life parenting, where I'm implementing all of the connected parenting principles to the best of my ability with Dr. Purvis. And because I remember thinking, okay, how do people actually say this? I'm reading these scripts. How do they actually, what does it really look like? You know? So I presented my idea to her, and she thought it was a great idea. So we started writing the book in 2012, mm-hmm. a long time ago. But during those years while we were writing, you know, of course, Dr. Purvis had cancer. We were really in the depths of some hard, hard parenting. And then, we were writing throughout all of these years, and we would kind of write for a while, and then something would happen and write. And then when we lost Kalki Don, I remember thinking I didn't know if the book would ever be finished. I just didn't know if I'd ever be able to write again. I didn't know if I'd ever be able to think again. You know, really, I had some head injury and the accident, and I nearly gave up. And then as I got better, I thought, you know what? I need to finish this in honor of Kalki Don. I mean, it's because of her that we learned all of this. I mean, God used her in so many ways to change us, to lead us to some desperation, which led us to help. And so I called Dr. Purvis, and I said, you know what? I think I want to do it. I think we should finish. And she was game. So we started working again, and not too long after her cancer returned, and she passed away much more quickly than any of us imagined she would. But fortunately, because we'd been working for so long, most of the book was complete. You know, there were some portions that were not complete, but it was substantially done. And so her longtime assistant, Emily Pickett, joined me and took Karen's notes and everything using all of Karen's words and helped finish it to completion so that we could actually bring it to people.
Wow. I love that. I love that you finished that in honor of Chalkidon and really also Dr. Purvis.
Yes, very much. I mean, it is her final written work, you know, and I didn't know for certain how her family would feel about it, you know, and but they very much wanted it published and they've been part of that process. So it's been really special.
I'm sure healing too, the whole process of bringing it to completion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So TBRI, Dr. Purvis and the Connected Child provided the family-saving, life-changing tools we needed for our kids. And I can't wait for the book to be released because I know my copy of The Connected Child looks like it's been through a battle. Because
yes. Mine has tons of little post-it notes all through it. You know, I got to get these things quickly.
I just posted a picture of it because somebody tagged me in one of those Facebook things where you're like, for 7 days, you have to just post a picture of a book that you've read. And that was one of them. And you can see the battle scars on it. But it was definitely what helped us. So I can't wait for The Connected Parent to be released. Tell us when it will be released and how we can find it.
The book will be released by Harvest House on July 7th. And in very exciting news, as long as I'm still able to travel, the audiobook, I'm recording the audiobook in San Diego, and that will be released on the same day, we hope. That's the plan. And so I'm really excited about that. And of course, it can be purchased anywhere. Books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the places online. And I would add, if your listeners are considering buying the book, if they want to pre-order the book from Amazon or somewhere else, that is actually really good. Pre-orders help a book gain momentum. And so we're encouraging people to pre-order as much as possible because it tells booksellers, it tells the publisher, it tells everybody, oh, people actually want this book and this is how many we're going to order. So pre-orders are super important.
Well, now that you said that, I will be pre-ordering mine today
because wonderful.
I will want that on my bookshelf and I cannot wait. Lisa, parenting in the midst of this COVID-19 shutdown has been especially challenging for foster and adoptive parents. At the time of this recording, my boys have been out of school for 11 weeks and my youngest, he's struggling. He needs that high structure, high nurture environment. He needs, you know, guided social programs to help him with his social skills. And of course, being home all day long for 11 weeks, mostly with just mom during the day, isn't cutting it. He hasn't seen in person any of his classmates in 11 weeks. And then we just found out that his summer program he went to last year for the first time, it's this 6-week wonderful program through Easter Seals for kids with special needs. It's a day program. They swim and do crafts and they have these little small groups. And it was last year we put him in this program for the first time and he blossomed. He made his very first friend ever. And they continue to, they are in different school districts, but they continued this friendship by doing FaceTime. So they regularly do that. And it was such a life-changing positive experience for our son that we couldn't wait for him to start this program again this summer. And it's been canceled, which has me very, I'm mad. Like I can say, I am mad because it's 6 weeks in July during the day. They're all outside. And I just feel like it should not have been canceled, but that's probably again another show. Mm-hmm. But my son is suffering and I know he's not the only one. All children are having a hard time with this, but especially our kids from hard places. So what advice, Lisa, can you give us when it comes to parenting, especially our kids from hard places during this crazy time?
Well, I think we have a lot in common with our kids. And so the things that you've talked about are very similar to what have the things that have held us together during this time. And I think one thing that helps is structure, of course. And so what I am really a fan of, I used to try to create schedules. You know, we're going to do this at 8 o'clock. We're going to do this at 9 o'clock, things like that. And what I found is we would start out strong for a really short time. And then it would be like day three. And I'd realize we were already an hour off schedule. And then the whole thing just kind of fell apart. So I changed from doing schedules to doing routines. So we do things in a specific order. And that's posted on the refrigerator. So, you know, it may not start at exactly the same time every day, but basically we're going to do breakfast first. We're going to do chores. We're going to do schoolwork, you know, and it just progresses through the day. And I don't get worried about exactly the timing. Mm-hmm. I just try to keep it in order. That helps us a lot.
Yeah. With my son, my youngest son, especially, he would need to know. And he's always asked these questions. So it's not just during this time of COVID-19, but he would ask us, what are we doing tomorrow? And mm-hmm. I would tell him, what are we doing next week? What are we doing next year? Like, he needs to know what's coming, right? He needs to know. So now everything's up in the air and we don't know what's happening and we don't know what's coming. So he's been experiencing some stress for that. And I homeschooled for 16 years. We ended up our last two putting them in school because they had such significant needs that I just couldn't make the structure happen how they needed it. And then we were so busy running to occupational therapy and speech therapy and vision therapy and all these things that we were out more than we were home to school. So this was their third year in our public school system, and our school system has a phenomenal special education program. The boys really blossomed. They were flourishing. And now, especially my youngest, is sort of wilting and losing this program now. And then, you know, there's talk in the news about will school even be open in September. I'm just, you know, inside stomping my feet and screaming, no, no, no. They have to go back to school because of that structure. We've done some routine, like what you're saying. I try to be very routine every day. And now when he says, what are we doing tomorrow? Well, the same thing we did today.
pretty much, right? I did buy a trampoline. And that has been helpful for my youngest, who has a lot of energy. It's very regulating, you know? And I know people worry about the safety of trampolines, but honestly, the risk of a broken leg versus dysregulation every day, it's just so, it gives him the sensory input he really needs. So I do like that a lot. The other thing you mentioned was choices. I also use choices. I think especially at this age, I mean, they're useful all the way through, but at this age when they're preteens and teens, you know, choices show respect to them that we think they're capable of making a decision. But of course, the options are ours that we're offering. So just like you were talking about. So I have been doing a lot of that. Like, would you like to do this first or second? You know, I still need it done. Do you want to have breakfast before your chore or after your chore, depending, you know, so.
And I found when I learned about how choices help them make decisions, it helps their brain function. I realized my son doesn't really, like, I'll ask him what he wants for breakfast and he'll be like, I don't know, whatever you want. Or, you know, what do you want to wear to school? Whatever you want, babe. But finally, when I learned about giving them choices and how that empowers them and helps them to make decisions, then I started doing that on purpose. Like, okay, do you want to wear the blue sweatpants or the black sweatpants? Do you want cereal or toast? And, you know, now more and more I am seeing now where he'll be able to tell me exactly what he wants. Sometimes he'll revert back to, well, what do you want? You know, and I'm like, well, what do you feel like? If I just say, what do you want for lunch? He won't be able to really make that decision all the time. But if I give mm-hmm. him options and I'll pick things I know he likes, he'll make a decision. So it's definitely helped him in that area. And so when he comes to me and tells me exactly something he wants, I praise him for that, because for a long time, he wasn't able to do that. He didn't have that voice. And now he does. So it's empowering, but it also helps get you through the day and get those things done that they think they're supposed mm-hmm. to be doing.
Yes.
So I love that. Thank you for sharing that with us. So Lisa, as we wrap up here, what is on your heart that you want to make sure our listeners hear today?
I think what I'd like to encourage your listeners is that a lot of us went into adopting our children because we really loved Jesus and we really loved children and we felt called. Mm-hmm. And a lot like you and me, we'd already been parents before. I really felt like I was a good mom. I mean, I've been a mom 20 years, you know, before we ever adopted. And when my kids came home, and two of them in particular had such severe challenges and such extreme behaviors, I remember just feeling stunned. And I remember feeling kind of shattered, like, wait, God, I'm sure we heard your voice. But if we are walking where you asked us to walk, why is it this way? You know? And I took a lot of shame upon myself. I think I mentioned that I felt like I must be doing it wrong. And it took me a long, long time, I think, to just come to a place of, first of all, grieving some of the losses, you know, grieving the loss of what I thought life was going to be like, grieving the loss of what our family culture was. Like you, we had homeschooled. I homeschooled for 23 years and I put my youngest two in school. So, but actually more than my youngest two, but now I have my youngest two. And because I couldn't do it all. I couldn't be mom and teacher for them. Being mom was hard. Having a mom was hard for some of my kids. And so, you know, I think we have to grieve those losses, and it's okay to admit that there's loss, you know, to be able to say, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. But I think we have to come to the place, we have to come through, just, you know, just keep connecting with the Lord over and over. And I think eventually we can come to a place of saying, okay, we are not the family we used to be, but God is making something beautiful here. It's broken, it's messy, it's hard, but it's redeeming. And it is the gospel that we're doing our best to follow, and he's making something beautiful, and we just have to be faithful and trust him. And I also think we do not have the mind of God, and we will understand a whole lot more, I think, when we're with him someday.
Absolutely. I know I interviewed an adoptive mom once. Her name is escaping me, but she was going through a very hard time with her children and crying out to the Lord, you know, like, I obeyed you. We adopted these kids. We stepped out in faith. And why is this so hard? And the Lord really put on her heart, you know, the reward for obedience isn't everything working perfectly. The reward for obedience is intimacy with Christ.
Yes.
We are taken to our knees. We, you know,
yes,
we have to go before the Lord because we can't do this without him. And I feel like that is one of, you know, the things that my relationship with the Lord has flourished through this process.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Desperation draws us close, right? Well, you know, one thing that really helped me in terms of understanding that obedience and suffering can walk together is when I really started reading and thinking about Paul. You know, Paul was clearly in obedience to the Lord. I mean, look what an incredible influence he's had on all of us. And yet he suffered so much. He was imprisoned. He was shipwrecked. He was stoned. I mean, and God used him so powerfully, you know, so, so powerfully. I did want to add too that I think when we are in these hard, hard places, I think it's really easy for us to begin to isolate ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, it gets hard. It got so that I could hardly leave my house because the behaviors were so challenging. And one of the most important things on this journey is to have community. I think even if you have one good friend who you can be truly honest with, it's powerful. If it weren't COVID-19, I would say in-person support groups, you know, if you can gather with other adoptive parents. But online support has been a huge part of my story. You know, way back in the day, I think we had a Yahoo group for our adoption agency. And I met people in that group who I am still truly friends with to this day. And so there's a lot of support online. I personally do offer a private coaching and support group on Facebook, but there are many other options out there. And I think it's important to reach for community, even if it feels really hard.
Yeah, and especially fellow adoptive and foster moms who get this journey, because yes, not everybody gets it. If you have a great friend who has an adopted, who is supporting you and is able to come alongside you, that's wonderful. But I know for me, I found that when we first brought our kids home, I didn't really know that many other adoptive moms, and my closest friends hadn't adopted, and they didn't really quite understand what we were going through. You know, they need a spanking, or you need to discipline better, or whatever. And you need to have your community, and they really surround yourself with fellow adoptive and foster parents who get it, who are on the journey, who are in the trenches, and who can come alongside and support. And there are great, you can do a workshop together, or a Bible study together, or you can do it on Zoom, or, you know, through a Facebook group or whatever, and do, you know, the connected child or the connected parent when the connected yes. parent comes out. I know an adoptive mom just released a Bible study for foster and adoptive moms called Second Mom. And I interviewed her not too long ago, Jody Tucker. And that's a phenomenal study to do in a group. But you definitely need your community. That is huge. So thank you for reminding us of that, Lisa. So where can our listeners connect with you? You've got lots of places and ways to do that.
Yes. Well, probably the easiest place is my website, onethankfulmom.com. And you can find my blog there. You can find information about my coaching group or my mentoring group. You can find out about the book. So everything is there. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram as One Thankful Mom. And you can find my podcast at The Adoption Connection.
Yes, and your co-host with the podcast, The Adoption Connection, Melissa Corkum, who is an adoptee and an adoptive parent, she's going to be on our show coming up. And it was so funny because I connected with you and then Melissa reached out to me, and I didn't realize until I went to your website that you guys work together. You host that the podcast together. So I thought that yes. was cool. How God, I love it when God works those things out, right?
Yes, yes. So yes, it's theadoptionconnection.com, or you can just find it in your podcast app, The Adoption Connection.
And we'll make sure to include the links to all your sites and everything in the show notes for this episode 222 of Orphans No More, as well as on our website, justicefororphansny.org. We always do a blog post about our the podcast. So we'll put all of that in there so our listeners will be able to easily go back and find that. So Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your story, for writing that book and seeing that project through, and for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure. And really, we have so much in common. We should be friends.
I feel like we're twins. Yeah.
Yes.
We're gonna don't hang up. We're gonna talk a little bit more about some of that, you and I after. But we want to thank our listeners for tuning in today for episode 222. Isn't that crazy? 222. For those of you who might not know, this show started many, many years ago as a radio show on a Christian talk radio station, and then we sort of morphed it into the podcast, and now we're solely the podcast. So we actually have over 200 episodes, but since we started keeping track via podcast, it's 222. So that's why the numbers are crazy like that. But I hope you were inspired and encouraged today. I know I was. So grateful for Lisa, and I'm looking forward to that, the Connected Parent book coming in July. Pre-order, you're going to want to get your copy. And please drop us a line. We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, leave us a comment at justicefororphansny.org. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a review. Tell your friends about it on your social media. Share it. We really appreciate that. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. Stay tuned to this podcast and our other social media sites for updates on the release of my first book, Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father. Please pray for me. I'm in the final rewrite of my manuscript with my writing coach. We're in the last chapter, and then it goes back to the publisher for editing. So yikes, it's a pretty exciting and scary place to be. So keep us in your prayers for that. And you can find and follow more episodes of Orphans No More on your favorite podcast platform, as well as our website. Again, that's justicefororphansny.org. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to being with you next time.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.